Blog Talk Radio.
Produced by Caleb Padgett on Finding My Way Radio Channel. Listen live on the internet or by calling toll-free 1-347-850-8560 in the U.S. or for international callers, dial 1-888-201-5313. Toll-free USA 1-347-850-8560. Toll-free international callers 1-888-201-5313.
My name is Debbie Keller, and my company is Home and Office Transition. I provide move management services for individuals and companies. We were looking for a company with high-quality service, integrity, and one that was committed to the same high standards of customer service that we were. And we found all of those in Ewing Moving and Storage.
There's a list a mile long of all my sins, of everything that I've done wrong. I'm so ashamed. There's nowhere left for me to hide. This is the day I must answer for my life. My fate was in the judge's hands. But then he turns to me and says, I know you, I love you, I gave my life to save you. Take the place for all my sins. I stand in awe. And now that I have been set free, and the tears well at the look of that book, could it should have been me. My fate was in the nail scarred hands. He stretched them. Yeah.
just a beautiful song by Kayla Padgett. And I apologize for a few seconds. We were on mute there. But I want you to know that Kayla Padgett sang that song when she was 15 years old. Oh, and maybe even younger. She'll tell me as soon as we're over. But Kayla Padgett is the CEO of Our Radio Network. And you are right now listening to Finding My Way Radio Network. It's a Christian radio network. And Kayla is our CEO, and she has very graciously allowed me to have a very special edition today where we will be talking to the Martin and Sanchez family. And the matriarch of the group is a lady named Pauline Sanchez, whom I am just a dear, dear admirer of because she is an amazing woman. I met her wonderful husband, Ezekiel Sanchez, in a magical place that I call Anasazi Foundation. And meeting Ezekiel Sanchez and Pauline Sanchez has been a life-changing thing for me. So I am really looking forward to today's conversation because we are going to be talking about the Navajo Nation. We are going to be talking about how COVID is affecting the Navajo Nation. We're going to be talking about service and love, and we're going to talk about this legacy of this amazing family. And I'd like to begin by introducing you to Pauline Sanchez. Pauline, are you on?
I am, Deborah. How are you today?
Well, we're just doing wonderful now that we're all here together. I wondered if you would mind, since we are on a Christian radio network, to offer us an opening prayer so that we can be open to the Spirit and the things that we might be talking about.
You know, I'll be more than glad to do that. And if you don't mind, Deborah, I'd like to speak it and say it in our native Navajo language so all who are listening can hear the language which the code talkers used in World War II. And it is the Navajo language is a spiritual language. So I will say it in Navajo, if that's all right with you.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Dean, Yajan Lini, Yashahon Loni, Duqua, Hadato, Hadato, Singit Niniki, I see by here, Sanitsin. Oko, Yad Ahon Kaja, Dilisto, and can take care of the Yad Aho, Okoyad Ahotati, Kitana, Ba, Oko, a Yodanitna. So, yeah, a whole Christian Hadi Little Quest had a did again just one loan on this. Did also a year. So, a Jordan in Nengi bear that Nigel Bishop and Nashit at the Dinkness. Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Pauline. I really appreciate that. We invite the Spirit to be here with us as we talk about the work that the Sanchez and Martin family is doing in the Bodway Gap chapter and the western region of the Navajo Nation. And to kind of go through this, I broke it down to who, what, where, and why. And we have beautiful April Sanchez on with us, and I am going to ask April to kind of give us a little overview on what is happening in the Navajo Nation right now, specifically in that area that the Martin and Sanchez family has felt prompted by the Holy Ghost to go and work in. April, would you mind telling us a little bit about what's going on?
I would love to, Deborah. So I recently had a friend who is non-Navajo, asked me, so why is the situation on the Navajo reservation so bad? Why are the COVID numbers so high? And I really had to kind of sum down this long story into a quick conversation with this person. And so I'm really grateful to be able to talk with you and to talk with the audience and just kind of share what's been going on in the Navajo Reservation. So previous to COVID-19 hitting us, We had certain things in place on the reservation that had stopped our development as a nation. And so one of the things that we had talked about was, why is water so scarce on the reservation? Why is the development on the Navajo reservation so slow? Why is the health on the reservation among the Navajo so poor? Kind of all of those questions. Why is there no electricity? Why is food scarce? And so as in an attempt to answer that, I've looked online. I've talked to, obviously, a lot of my elders and also my Masana, my maternal grandmother, when she was alive, was very active in our community and very, very in the forefront of talking to our leaders and our community around us, especially in Bideaue and in Tuba City and in the surrounding areas. So what happened on the Navajo Reservation to stop development was actually something called the Bennett Freeze. And so when I looked into that even more, because I had heard about that most of my life, the Bennett Freeze actually happened in 1966. So the effects of the Bennett Freeze, and what the Bennett Freeze actually is it was a land dispute between my Navajo Nation and then the Hopi people. And the solution the government found was to freeze everything on the Navajo Nation. So no development could happen after 1966. That included fixing roofs, building houses, construction gas or water lines, repairing roads, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that was in place until 2009. So from between 1966 to 2009, zero development was allowed on the Navajo Reservation. So a personal example of this is my grandfather, Shache, my maternal grandfather, his name is Frank Martin. He actually was trying to build a house on the reservation and couldn't complete it because the Bennett Freeze came down in 1966. So his house still stands, but it's incomplete. And when I would go back to visit my grandmother on the reservation, because I currently live off the reservation with my family, when we go back, they would take us to his house. My mom would take us to his house and we would see it, and it still stands, but it's uncompleted. So when people ask us, why is the Navajo Nation not developed? For that amount of time, we were not allowed to develop anything, even fix roofs, put in water or gas lines, anything. All of that was frozen on our part of reservation. Another part of that is the water situation. So that comes to play in a lot of things, it has a lot of different moving parts in that. But to kind of bring it up to today. So I recently found an article where the EPA, the EPA actually issued, you could say, or legalized the approval for water quality standards. A program for water quality standards on the Navajo Reservation. And so it was approved for the Navajo Nation in 2006. So that meant that there would be a program that would monitor the quality of our water on the reservation. However, that actually wasn't put into, so we were approved, but it couldn't go into effect until May of last year, meaning like, we had to apply for it, and then we were finally approved in 2019, May 2019. So the conditions of our water and how scarce it actually was on the reservation, we actually couldn't do anything until our problem or plan of action or among the tribes, we had to get approved by the U.S. government for them to actually come and look at our water and see what the problem was. And that happened in 2006. And then in 2019, they finally approved that an action plan so the water qualification standards program could actually begin to be created and put into place. So it's only been a year since the EPA has actually approved the Navajo Nation to start putting some sort of water quality standards on our reservation. So,
wow, that is shocking.
Yeah, so this is actually, we couldn't develop on the Navajo Nation until 2019. And then we actually couldn't really look at the quality of our water until 2019. Development in 2009, and then our water in 2019. And what really hit us on our side of the reservation was the uranium mining that happened. And that actually happened way back in 1944 with the Manhattan Project, when the U.S. government was, we were entering that season of war. And we actually have over 1,000 uranium mines still contaminated and uncleaned, or unfiltered, I guess you could say. And so there, that situation where the uranium mines were, when they tried to clean up the after effects of all of the uranium mines, or actually the waste of the uranium mines, they actually buried it near natural springs. And so the underwater ended up really affecting people in those areas. A lot of our water, too, is redirected and has the control to be redirected to other states. And I tried to find that source, and I'll be able to find it later. But one of the things that I heard was that a lot of our water that would run naturally on our reservation, especially Bide Way area, is actually redirected to Nevada. And so scarcity of water kind of has a few different aspects, and that is our natural waterways are being redirected to other groups of people, and then the water we do have, some of it is contaminated.
And it's my understanding that on top of every other restriction that you're facing, on top of every challenge that you have, because I know the uranium is also affecting the health of the people, there's some cancer and kinds of issues that are accompanying with the toxic waste that comes from the uranium mining. But, you know, I understand that you cannot dig more than, what is it, 1 foot down into the ground either. So you wouldn't be able to even try to dig your own well without permission, because after that, that property belongs to the federal government. And I don't think you actually own your land either. Is that correct?
It's true. As Navajos, we cannot own land on the reservation. And so what is one of the things that is part of our treaty with the U.S. government is that all the people on the reservation have to agree if we're going to make changes. And that's very difficult to get, you know, 200,000 people to agree, whether it's on a larger scale or even a smaller scale, because we're divided up into chapter areas and things like that, regional areas. Yeah, there are certain things that are set in place that we can't seem to truly overcome, because it's on all sides. It's water, it's development, it's ground. And so you're correct. And I actually looked for that source, but I have actually heard that all my life. That there's a certain measurement into the ground, that past that measurement, all the earth underneath that belongs to the government. So if we found any natural resources, if we found any sort of valuable things in the earth, if it was below a certain measurement, it automatically belonged to the U.S. government. So
thank you so much, April. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. You have given us an eye-opening overview. And as an attorney and one that's dealt with discrimination, I want to remind our listening audience that's really listening from all over the world, because Finding My Way is an international radio network, that marginalization and persecution and blame and judgment of a people for their condition is called racism. To really become an anti-racist, we have to recognize that people are people. They're human beings, just like you and I, and that our Father in heaven has created them equally as we are, with all the same emotions. And so if someone's poorer than we are, we cannot blame it on the people, because like you and me, they'll have, you know, different personalities, abilities, passions. Let's blame poverty, marginalization, and persecution, dehumanization of the people on unequal policies, not the people, but the policies that have created that kind of environment. And so when people say, well, why is all this happening on the reservation? Please remember, it is not the Navajo people. It is the unequal policies that have affected the people. And I would say, think of what our Heavenly Father wants of us. We in our religion have a story of a city named Enoch, where there will be no poor among us. And my hope and my prayer in this show and is that we will be able to talk about what it takes. And I'll tell you, there is nothing better than the Martins and the Sanchez's to tell us what it takes to have a legacy of service and love. And I'm going to ask Pauline, if you could give us a brief little why. Why are you out there risking your lives in this godforsaken area where there's no water and no utilities, no electricity, going from place to place? Why are you doing this? Why is your family involved? And I would remind you that there's a fundraiser going on, and you can go to www.thundervoiceeagle.com, and you will see a place to be able to donate to the Navajo Nation. But Pauline, I'm over to you. Why? Why are you as a family having this program, Families to Families?
We were raised there. I was born on the Navajo Reservation between an area that's Page, Arizona. People remember Lake Powell. And then also people are familiar with Flagstaff, Arizona. But I was born alongside that main Highway 89 in my mother's hogan. So I spent my childhood in the area in which we are protecting the elderly and trying to help the families in need, because we live there. We know what life is like out there. We survived without any utilities, no running water, no electricity, distances to the grocery store was either Flagstaff or Page or Artuba City, which is the closest, is about almost 40 miles one way, and then 40 miles home, and then whatever miles from the 89 in towards the east rim of the Grand Canyon. So it took long distances for us to get the things that we need. At that time, we had livestock. We had sheep and cows. Which nourished us. We use every part of those animals so that we could be able to sustain ourselves as best as we could, and the plants out there that grew in their seasons. And we also shared with one another. Part of the culture is contained in a simple word called ke, which means kinship. We are family. And so that is the reason that our hearts, even though we live off the reservation at this time, our hearts turn homeward to our families who were in need, and to the elderly and those that in families who hardly have much from day to day, from week to week, and from month to month. So we were all moved. Alicia, my niece, is probably the first one of us that motivated the rest of us. She started gathering funds to get boxes of food to those that were out there that needed food. Her and some other friends of hers started that. And then we were moved as we saw what was going on, the need that began to appear, because we saw people dying. Our own, you know, we have at least four of our family members who have passed away from COVID. My brother, who right now is going to be talking and sharing with us, Franklin's also had COVID. He's had the virus. So So all of this kind of just has been a way that has pulled us to go home and to see what we can do and how to protect our elderly.
Thank you. I really wanted to kind of interject this, and I apologize for interrupting, because I understand that the Navajo language and the Navajo people are very polite and don't interrupt each other. I thought that was a beautiful indication of what the culture brings to a culture of peace. You've taught me that the Navajo language is a culture of peace, and just the fact that you listen to one another and don't interrupt each other like I am shows you what a beautiful, beautiful people you are. But I wanted to kind of bring into the mix here is that Arizona right now, and I know you're in that Arizona area, is the new national hotspot for COVID-19. And Arizona is 3 times more COVID cases than the rest of the United States. It just kind of came out today. But in the Navajo reservation, you are experiencing COVID 3 times more than even the people inside Arizona are. So what you are doing is extremely valuable, and I'd like the listening audience to realize that that's what's happening there. I also would wish that you could tell us a little bit about the elders. You were about ready to say that. And then, in just a short, simple way, explain to us how valuable the elders are and what is happening to them.
Thank you, Deborah. Our elderly, this generation that are over maybe 70 and up, this is the generation that is the most important. They carry so much, I guess that's what it is. They carry so much of our history. They carry our language perfectly. They have lived in the areas. They carry the stories of our people and the good teachings that have sustained us through years. And so we are so concerned because we don't want to lose them. We just can't imagine life without them because they carry so much. They connect us to our past. They connect us beyond our long walk, the stories that they tell and the way they have lived and the way they survived through all these challenges and difficulties they faced. Our language is not a written language. In fact, in the I searched for it online, and it's called an extinct language. And I thought, no, we're still speaking it. It can't be. But I'm the first one living off the reservation. So, and they tame the peace and the way, that we were meant to live. And so we are, and the skills that they have, the rug making, the pottery making, the jewelry making, learning how to take care of livestock, learning how to live in nature, their songs, and all of the way that they are so full of kinship and love. We are trying to protect them because we don't have a lot of them compared to other people throughout the world. The numbers of our elderly, is diminishing in this generation that we are holding on to because once they leave us, our language, I don't know what's going to happen to our language and the things that they have tried to teach us. And so we're very concerned about that.
I'm so grateful that you explained that to us and that you've given us, an understanding that this is a legacy of love and a legacy of service, to remember that what you are doing by saving you're saving everyone on the land, I think, but, especially focusing on the elderly, is to also save your heritage, to save your traditions. And I'm so grateful that your family has taken it upon yourselves, because this is a family venture, folks, here on the radio. I want you to understand that this is a family matter, a family that has decided to take this upon themselves, and really what they're doing is nothing short of remarkable. Pauline, you mentioned your brother Franklin. Franklin, I wanted to ask you, because I know you're going there. You're traveling sometimes up to 200 miles a day. You're hauling water. You're hauling the donations that are coming in through www.thundervoiceeagle.com, and and you are bringing food. You're bringing pumps. You're bringing stoves. And I know that you're doing this with your family volunteering with you. Alicia precipitated all of this. Lehi Sanchez then put this on GoFundMe, and the Sanchez family has rallied around to do this. But you're the one that's dealing one-on-one with some of the people, and you actually speak Navajo. So you are such an important part of this, because I understand that most of the people that you're visiting actually don't speak English. Could you tell us just one story? Because we are not a very long show, but if you could give us a cameo, an example of what it's like to visit one family and what it is that you might find when you visit a family and try to bring relief to them for COVID. What is it that you do, and who is it that you are reaching out to? Could you do that for us, Franklin?
Yeah, I guess I'll try. There's quite a few people, so it's kind of hard to pick which one. And yeah, they have all different type of issues, and they need different type of things that need to be done for them and to help them, from the old to the young. You know, with this virus, we don't jobs for the young ones. They all come back, and it's hard on them to pay their bills and help their elderlies or their mom or their dads. So that affects even the younger ones, not only old ones. So, and then when you speak Navajo, it's more fluent to them, and they understand more. It's understandable, that language. So for me, it's kind of, I talk more Navajo being out there, and their conditions, you know, that kind of hurts me. And
I know that you're visiting people, and just tell us, like, what it's like to visit a household when you suddenly, you know, appear at some household. Just generally, what might you find when you go visit someone?
Well, there would be no water. They'd have a barrel, and then they'd have a house. They'd have no electricity, and then their stove. Some of them, they use firewood, and so some they need propane. And you would go visit them, and some have livestock, so that you would see that. And then, since it hasn't been raining for a little over a year now, that's another issue that each one of them have, is to water. They need water for livestock, and then food, and the main issue is food and water. So they, and then the furthest that you can. That I go is probably for one family. They go like maybe 30 miles just to go to get water. And then all the Badaway means in Navajo, the Bahuye, which means the water is scarce. And in that area, there's over 90 earthing dams. And we're losing a lot of animals, and the people that live there is that they cannot, so they start hauling water. So all the money that they have sometimes has to go to paying for fuel and getting water. So yeah, some family, that one guy that I know of, he didn't have water for quite a while. And I find out that there's just a half an inch a water line under the sink that dislocated, a copper line. So, and we went and we soldered that back for him, and we were trying to turn the water back on. And since it's been sitting there for years, that it was hard to do. So we just kind of let the utility people take care of that. And then another issue is their waste, their trash. And if they don't have no fuel, it's going to be hard to dispose of those. And so more or less they take care of each other. And that's what really, really how they pass on the virus is when you have a family, maybe daughter or son, and they all live together with their, come back and live with their parents and grandparents. It kind of, I think that's how it was that all this kind of really hit the Navajo Nation. To me, I thought
and
we
I
were kind of
And I understand, frankly,
isolated.
Isn't it true that, isn't it so that you've had COVID? So you're able to explain to people because without electricity, without all of these amenities, you don't have radio, you don't have television. And I understand that a lot of people don't even enjoy having cell phones. So they're not really learning the facts about COVID. So because you've had COVID, your family has had COVID, you can firsthand tell them a little bit about that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So some of them don't understand, even though they might know a little bit about it, but actually going through it, we'd have to explain to them how bad it is. You know, you're not breathing and your head hurts or your chest hurts and you don't even know how you get it. So that's what I explained to them is what I went through going to the hospital and ICU for close to 2 weeks and then finally getting out and still you're still like that even though your diagnosis your test comes out negative and you still have this after effect and it's still like that a little bit with me even though it's over a month now. So my wife has gone through it, some of our kids, so that's what we tell them and they kind of get the message a little better from somebody that's talking to them in Navajo. So it's a little, I think there's more understanding to them when somebody talks to them in their own language instead of English, that they kind of know a little bit of it.
Well, I can't thank you enough for giving us an idea of what it's like to go visit someone. I know that you're taking a great risk. I know that your whole family is taking a great risk because you don't know if you aren't visiting someone that has COVID. And on that note, I think I'm going to turn it over to my favorite courage keeper in this group right now, and that's Alicia, because Alicia has shown great determination and courage to take it upon herself to make that first step. And that's what life is all about. You know, we whine and complain about our lot, and we think it's, you know, just very, very hard. But then when we look outside of ourselves and we give to others, we can create magic. We can create alliances. We can create amazing things. And what Alicia did with her initial concern for the people was create a movement among your family. And I'm so grateful for her. So Alicia, you know, we talked a little bit about the WHO. That was Frank and the people that he's meeting. And I think you see the WHO all the time. And we've talked a little bit about why and what's happening. But I kind of want to know, where is it that you go when you go? How does that whole process work? How are you picking up? What are you picking up? What kind of things are you picking up? Where are you taking them to? And what risks are you going through when you do it?
I think we start off with the people. My dad knows pretty much everyone out there because he's grown up out there. He's always helped the people out there. So it's just what we would normally do, which is go check on, you know, our neighbors and see how they're doing, you know, when COVID first hit. So we started taking food out there. And so we go out to those we know, and then people let us know of, you know, other people that, can you check on these people that live over, you know, over that ridge, or you should go back here. And we just drive around and we find them. Just the other day, you know, we stopped at a house, we filled up their water, and then we, you know, discuss what they need. And, you know, the next day it changes our schedule almost daily because the next morning I had to get up and meet them at the trash dump here in Page because there is no trash services out there. So we filled up their gas and they came to Page, dumped their trash, and then we gave them food and a propane bottle. And then after that, there was a veteran and another man that we found out in a copper mine, which is near Bottaway. And yeah, the next day I had to take them food, just to check on them, make sure they're okay. So we act immediately as soon as we stumble upon, you know, home we've never been to. And then we went to, I forgot her name.
Is that, do you have a truck that's like filled with supplies, and do you have, or do you have runs that you do? Because I know you've got water, you've got sanitation supplies, you've got food. I mean, I look at these beautiful pictures, which I wish our radio viewers who, and listeners could view, that are magnificent pictures. But then I also see pictures of this land that is just dying with, you know, dead bones and animals. I understand that there's, when you go with water, the water drips outside of your trucks and animals are literally following you because they're also dying of thirst. What are you bringing to them, and what risks are you taking when you do bring them to them?
Well, one woman, we dropped off a stove. We just happened to pick her to receive a stove. She has it's like a shack. I think people off the reservation, they have a shack. It's smaller than a hotel room that she lives in with two little kids. So we brought a little stove, and you know, we took it to her, we dropped it off, we set it inside, but we try not to touch anything else, and we have an alcohol spray bottle to kill any germs immediately around us, and we also spray ourselves down afterwards, and we're always constantly spraying the food and the cleaning items when we drop it off. We tell them to wipe it again with the bleach that we leave with them. Sometimes we tell them just let it sit, you know, outside for a day or two and then clean it off. So it could, you know, the more precautions they take, the less likely of a spread. But, yeah, we dropped it off at her house, and then her family let us know that she tested positive for COVID, I think. Or they said she had COVID. She seemed fine, but we don't know for sure. But we have treat everyone as if they have COVID, just due to maybe they don't understand COVID. They might think they have a little cold. We delivered water to one man who didn't feel that well. And, but you know, he's like, I don't have that sickness though. So, but we just have to have all these precautions in place to keep ourselves safe. And,
I understand. I'm just going to ask you this one last question, because I understand that on top of your campaign, and I've seen this on Lehi's website, on top of your campaign to educate, you're also documenting all this, which is very important for your area, to be documenting all these outliers that are so far away from the regular donations and the regular means by which supposedly this is supposed to happen. But I also understand you've had to have a mask campaign. Could you tell us a little bit about why there has been a mask campaign with the city? I think it's the city of Page and other maybe businesses. What is the reason why, on top of what you're doing, you're also engaging in a campaign?
Yeah, I live in a border town, so right at the edge of the Navajo Nation is Page, Arizona, and you know, people from the reservation travel over an hour or 2 hours to the nearest Walmart because they just have either small grocery stores or small gas stations to shop at. So they travel far, and if you can imagine, people even from 1 hour away just coming to Page to grocery shop, that's a lot of elders that aren't aware of the situation. They don't have, you know, social media, they don't have the news. If you just eliminate electricity from your home, that eliminates the outside world pretty much. So we know they come here, and the 4th of July was coming up. The city of Page hasn't you know, I think the city of Page in Arizona, for example, show, you know, they don't take COVID seriously. So a few of us, you know, we already went through our first wave. We knew how bad COVID is. So we had this mask campaign, reaching out to the mayor, trying to convince them to mandate masks. And we were giving out masks at Walmart. We're the first of the month is always when the elders come out to shop. So we made sure to be there on the first, second, and the third. And we cleaned their carts. We had hand washing stations set up when they left the grocery store so they could wash off their hands from touching things. And we gave out over 1,600 masks those 3 days. And I think on the second day, the city of Page had an emergency vote and they decided to mandate masks. And then, you know,
wow,
later on,
what a victory.
Yeah, that was a victory. I mean, the science and the facts, you know, they support masks and bringing down numbers. The Navajo Nation implemented.
That's correct. And I think you have a victory, not just in the mask story, but also you've been in contact with the hospitals. And haven't they told you something about, you know, what's happening with the curve in this western area, this far western area that you're in because of your particular efforts? What have they said about that?
Yeah. Not long after the peak of our first wave, I have a friend who's on the board with the Indian Health Services, and she let me know that, you know, there's signs showing that what we're doing on the western side is bringing down our numbers a lot. So that was really good to hear.
So you're actually flattening the curve on that area of the reservation.
Yeah, the Navajo Nation has done a lot, and I think that really shows with our numbers and, you know, with the mandating masks. The Navajo Nation president has put out hand washing stations outside of public places. You know, some of the stores actually clean your cart on the reservation before you go in, and they do temperature checks. So that's really helped us flatten our curve on the reservation. So that's really good.
Well, I'm thankful because I know that even though those great efforts are going on, that you yourselves as a family have taken on the way out far away places. And we're so grateful for you and your family. I think at this point, I'd like to go back to April and let April just kind of give us a little one-minute wrap-up. If you had something that you wanted to tell everyone of what you would like us to do for you to help you in your campaign, what would you like to do, us to do? Because April.
Hi, Deborah. Hi.
Hi.
I think the main thing would just to be share our story. One of the things that I realized recently is my generation is the first generation to speak English as their first language. So for all the generations that the Navajo have existed, my generation is the first to speak English as our first language. So it is our generation and our generation's responsibility to truly share our story in the dominant language of the world, which is English. And so our asking, our pleading with everyone who's listening is please share our story. We are finally in a position to be able to speak and talk about the things on our reservation. And language is power. Being able to speak to others and communicate what's going on, that is one of the biggest powers that you have in the world. And so for us, we ask people, please share our story. And if you are touched by our story, come to us and ask us how and in what ways you can help. Because in the history of our Navajo people, we've had many people come on our land and tell us, this is how we are going to help you. And a lot of those solutions have not worked out, or there have been no solutions. And so as a people, if you would like to come and help us, come and communicate with us. And first, as Deborah said, we are people of listening. So you will hear our stories, and then we will invite you to also tell your story. And then please share our story, the things you've heard today, and go to the website a Thunder Voice Pat Co or thundervoiceeagle.com, and there is a link that says that you can click onto and donate directly, and the funds go directly into the GoFundMe, and then those go through the GoFundMe immediately to Alicia, and those feed on the ground. So there's no middleman. And then Alicia and my Uncle Franklin will take all of the money, and they'll buy supplies, beds, fill the propane tank, use that money to pay for gas, to haul water, because our people are in really a struggling position, and we haven't been able to truly progress as a people. So please share a story. If you can donate, come talk to us, because now we can truly speak English, and we can tell you about what's going on.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, April. I really am so moved. It hurts. What I'd like to kind of finish this up with, I guess, is the idea that we have a scripture, and it says that when you are in the service of your fellow beings, you are in the service of your God. And those of us who consider ourselves Christian, those of us who consider ourselves a people of God, have an obligation to remember all the children of God. And I feel, as a peace builder, as an attorney that has handled a lot of areas of conflict, I've also dealt with some of the Native American intertribal association issues in the state of Tennessee, I think that it's really, really important for our nation, the United States of America, to remember the original indigenous populations that were on this beautiful earth of ours before we came, and to be very, very careful that we don't destroy what was once there. And I am especially anxious that our listeners understand what a valuable legacy the Navajo people have been for us, what an incredible contribution they have brought to our culture, to our way of being today, and how we have lost an awful lot of the gorgeous language and the gorgeous feelings and perhaps even the proper sentiments that we should have about the earth, about one another, and about peace. Pauline, I was hoping that you could give us just a very short farewell by telling us a little bit about the legacy of peace that the Navajo language can bring. I know that a lot of these words that we have that have to do with conflict, our definition of God, many things are different in the Navajo language. Could you give us just one example of how beautiful this language is and why we cannot allow the elders to die and lose this legacy?
You bet. I'll be glad to, Deborah. The one word that I hear all the time that my mother and others have said to me is the word Diyin. That is the word they use for the Holy One, for God. But also they say Anadiyin means life is sacred. And it's up to us what we are going to do with the life given to us and the life that surrounds us. And and kinship is sacred. Family is sacred. My mother used to look at me, and she'd look at me straight in the eye, and she'd say, Nadinian, you are sacred. That's what she pressed into me. And that gave me courage to do the things that I have been able to do, but also at the same time to keep my heart soft and to keep my spirit strong in hope and in generosity and in love. We never know who's going to need us, and it doesn't take a lot. It just takes a little bit of kindness, a smile, a touch of the hand. Just simple gifts mean so much, and that's what our people, these wonderful elderlies, they will extend their hand in a hand greeting. It is not a handshake, it is a hand greeting, And my mother used to say, in the center of your hand is your heart. In the center of my hand is my heart. And we bring them together gently and we hold it there. And we say, Yah means above. Ateh is good, or it is. So the value of that handshake, the kinship that comes together, is immeasurable. It is the yin. It's full of love and whatever is needed by one, the other one wants to. The other one wants to give in however way they can. We don't have any swear words in Navajo. Navajo is a spiritual language. The sacred being is still in his holy place. He will never be brought down in any way in the Navajo language. He is holy. He loves all of us. We are his children. He has made us sacred. So with that, I extend my gratitude to all of you that are listening, and my love, my sisterly love to all of you. And I extend invitation to you to help us donate to the funds. We take diapers, and we take diapers to the babies. We take water. The elderly, disposable underwear, food. Oh, just whatever, even propane stove. That is a very unique kind of stove out there. It's not a natural stove. It doesn't, natural gas. It doesn't use natural gas. It uses propane. So we were fortunate enough to find a company that's still making those propane stoves. And so we were able to take one to a family who, we took a propane bottle to them, but they didn't use it because they didn't have a stove for it. So there's so much need out there, and whatever you can donate, we can go ahead and gift our wonderful elderly and people. Your gifts, they weep. They weep with gratitude. They weep because they say, we are remembered. And the funny thing, the thing that strikes me is one of them said, maybe this invisible monster came so our children can come home. And that really has touched my heart when she said that. So we have come home, and we're trying to do the best we can to make sure that we protect them.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Pauline, for explaining to us the why, once again, the why that we as humans must connect, the kinship that we must all have one with another. And as always, I always end this show by thanking everyone for coming on to the Deborah Norwood Show. I always thank Kayla Padgett, my beautiful CEO, for allowing us to have this special edition on the Navajo Nation, and that beyond the big cough, which I also agree is that invisible monster that has come to not only the Navajo, but to our nation and to the world as a whole, in the hopes that maybe we can all hold each other's hands in greeting, and in that greeting hold the center of our hearts. I want to thank you for listening, and as always, may the meditations of our hearts and the words of our mouth be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my God and my Redeemer. Amen. Thank you for coming. Thank you, Franklin, for your beautiful words, for your wonderful understanding of your people. Thank you, Alicia. Thank you, Pauline. Thank you, April. I hope we can meet again soon.
Thank you, Deborah. We love you.
Thank you. We love you, too.
Produced by Kayla Padgett on Finding My Way Radio Channel. Listen live on the Internet or by calling toll-free 1-347-850-8560 in the U.S. or for international callers, dial 1-888-201-5313. Toll-free USA, 1-347-850-8560. Toll-free international callers, 1-888-201-5313.